Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stay on Target. We are your hosts.
You can follow us on Twitter at JohnWright777.
And ChrisWright250. This is episode...
number 61. And we are reviewing The Valiant Hearts, The Great War.
Yes. Valiant Hearts, The Great War.
Yes.
Yes.
I put the emphasis on all weird syllables. I was trying to like throw us off where it's like, what game are we reviewing? What are we talking
about? It's a different game, very similar title. The Valiant Hearts.
Valiant Hearts.
Valiant Hearts. Yes, that's what it was. The Great War.
The
yes.
Great War.
We have reviewed that, and or we haven't reviewed it yet. Going to review it.
We've played that.
Yes, we have not reviewed it. And yeah, we'll be doing that a little bit later. So John, how was your week?
It's great.
Nice.
It was a good week. It was, so as we approach the holiday, like in the U.S., if you're listening in the U.S., you know that this is the holiday.
Right.
And I guess the rest of the world probably knows too. It's the 4th of July, the old Independence Day. And, that happens Friday. And so like everybody gets off like work on Friday or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like this extended weekend.
Yep.
And so, you know, Catherine and I were like, hey, let's go head out of town on the weekend. So it's like I'm increasingly getting excited, like more excited about this like mini vacation situation.
You're leaving tomorrow after work?
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah.
We're recording this on Wednesday.
Yes, we're recording this on Wednesday. And so it's,
it's going up on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I'll be well out. Like I'll be on my way back. No, I won't. Yeah. I won't. But
so where are you going?
Well, we're actually heading down to Orlando, do some Disney stuff, hit a Disney water park and find out what other trouble we can get up into.
Ooh,
so
you need to get in a lot of trouble
at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Just
nice.
I'm totally kidding. That's not, you know,
not in the plans.
Well, that might be in the plans.
Possibly.
But not getting into trouble there.
I like the openness here.
As every hour that goes by, it's like you can focus less and less on what you should be I've got to get this done and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
this week, because of, I think I made the comment on Tuesday, which was yesterday.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, today is basically Wednesday because, you know, tomorrow is basically Thursday and Thursday is basically Friday. Well, that screwed up my today because every Wednesday, like we all get together and we have Devo and like I go to work, and in my mind, it was Thursday. And I told this same thing to Fultron, Josh Fulton, who was on the podcast last week. And so he's sitting there, and everybody just got up. Like, all 300-plus employees, 400-plus employees, walk across the parking lot to our conference center.
And you guys are just...
And we're just sitting there, working away.
Just by yourselves.
And, then Fultron's like, hey... This is Wednesday.
He probably was sitting there and went, it's really quiet in here right now.
Yeah, he did. He like looked up. Well, and this is the crazy thing. Okay, so there were so many warning signs. First, I pull into the parking space, and like we have two sections of our building, and like I go up into one, and there's another, and I walk over to our main building, and there are several people who pull in and park, and I'm like, they just walk all over to the separate, like the building the conference center is in. I'm like, oh man, well, that's weird. I mean, I guess they, I don't know why they didn't park up there if they work up there. All right, okay, cool. And I walk in and like no one's up there. Like, and I didn't notice that no one literally was up there. I just noticed that our entire team was not there. And I'm like, man, it's weird that there's some kind of project that everyone's on except for me and Josh. And I was like, well, cool.
Well, let me posit this to you. If like the zombie apocalypse had happened.
Yeah.
You would have been sitting there like and like
unaware.
It's like there's somebody munching on something in the kitchen and you're like, "Hey Steve, how's it going?"
Yeah.
And like you walk, I can just imagine you just being completely oblivious to the entire zombie apocalypse.
Yep. That
until,
was this morning.
Until you guys kind of look at each other and you're like, "Man, why is no one here and why does Steve have an arm in his hand?"
We figured out, you know, everyone who's left alive is headed to Canada. And we're just like, "Well,
Exactly.
Let's do our work."
So it's Canada because they would freeze, right?
I don't know why, like, I picked Canada. Well, I mean,
because like muscles can't really move with
that's
that, you
that's
know,
a good reason.
Just scientifically,
like this was my in my head. I was
frozen
like,
frozen zombies
there
would be
are
really
less,
scary.
Less people. Like the further north you go, like who wants to go? Oh man, who wants to go spend the zombie apocalypse in Mexico?
Well, yeah. Well, like, think about, like,
I don't want to do that.
Think about Dead Island, like the games and stuff. It's like, there's, it's just like sticky. It's like the you know, the smell of zombie flesh of just, permeating throughout the tropical breeze.
Decaying bodies, seagulls.
This went to a really strange place.
Yeah. But anyway, so as a result, I don't think it's not, no. What I'm about to say is not a result of what I just described. But this weekend, I'm just going to stay here. I think we're going to watch the fireworks here in Nashville.
Killer.
It's supposed to be like,
it's always a good time.
It's supposed to be the longest and most fireworks that Nashville's ever shot off. It's going to be 27 minutes long.
That's awesome.
And I forget how many fireworks.
That's awesome.
I don't think they said how many specific fireworks. They said how many pounds.
How many pounds? Like, so is this like just the pounds of TNT? Or is
I mean, probably. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah.
There's probably enough TNT in downtown Nashville right now to take down the Batman building, which if you're from Nashville, you will know what that building is. The AT&T building or whatever.
I think it was 2012 whenever the... all the fireworks in San Diego all went off all at once.
Yes.
Someone presses like the shoot all button and they all just go off in the course of 30 seconds.
I feel like this is like the Doofenshmirtz self-destruct button where it's like, why did I put that on there? Why was that even an option? You know, that's, in hindsight, this seems like a bad idea to put the fire all button.
I remember watching it and it's just like, holy cow, that is a mess. It doesn't make any sense at all.
The music starts playing, and so it's literally just all on the downbeat of that first song.
I can't even imagine what that would sound like, dude. That would just be so loud.
Dude, so much displaced air. And just, oh gosh. Think about the, like, you can feel some of them on your chest or whatever. Think about that. Like, how that
would pounding on your chest real hard.
It's like, am I having a heart attack? What's going on right now? Anyway.
Yeah, so that's our fourths. Hopefully,
yes.
If all goes to plan.
Yes, hopefully it will all go to plan.
Yeah, yeah.
But happy 4th, by the way.
Yeah, happy 4th of July.
Yeah, that's whenever this podcast is dropping, so yeah.
Yes, it's a celebratory podcast.
it's a celebration. Okay, so before we get into the Great War review,
I did Valiant Hearts?
Yes, Valiant Hearts. I'm using like the sub name as the, dude, I'm trying different stuff. It's I should say it backwards, so it would be War Great the Hearts Valiant review.
That you did very well with that.
That was all like me trying to like remember what this is.
I don't know that I could have pulled that one off.
But anyway, before we get into that, I did want to mention that this week there has been, this is a relatively sad story, so somber tone here.
What?
A studio has closed.
Oh, I thought you were about to tell me someone had died that
no,
I knew about.
No, but I mean, a developer has died, Chris. And this was the developer that came out with a game recently. It was Murdered, Sole Suspect.
Yep.
They closed their doors this week.
Yeah, so we already said we were recording this on July 2nd, so this happened, like, this news broke today. I guess a reporter from GeekWire apparently showed up at the studio, I guess, to do some kind of story. And there's the place is closed, abandoned, no one there. And there's a sign on the door that says the company is closing.
Yikes. So no big PR announcement.
No.
It wasn't like, hey, let's get some press in here. It was just, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Airtight Games is the name of the developer. Yes. I don't think we mentioned the actual name of the developer.
Correct. Yeah. And so what's I think what boggles my mind about it is the fact that it just put out a game, weeks ago?
This wasn't very long ago. And I guess what you do see a lot of times with some developers is that whenever they come out with a big game, like not a huge developer, they will sometimes, you know, lay off some employees or like let their contractors go, that sort of thing.
They don't close.
They don't really close the doors though. Like, it's like there's still somebody in the office.
It's not like, hey, Epic put out their new game. They're closed now.
Yeah. No more.
Till next time.
And so it's in that instance is not like a movie. Like once the movie is over, a lot of times that company, like they don't exist anymore. In this instance, it's like
that's more of like, you're pulling together different parts to form a team, kind of like the Justice League.
Correct.
You know, you're pulling Batman to hold the lighting, and you got Green Lantern doing the grip stuff. You know, like you pull them all together, and they do their movie thing, and then they all
literally
disperse.
Just built the best like team in the world right there. But anyway, so yeah, but it's not like movies. They should still be around after this game, and it's like this could have been a follow up story to their latest game that came out. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of things that could be talking about. But.
Yeah, the thing that this brings up that I wanted to talk about is, you know, like this was not a AAA game. It's a middle tier game, and it didn't do I don't think it did badly. It got middling review scores and probably sold so-so.
I mean, if you just think about review scores and things, there are numerous like AAA games and like huge games that score lower than this one did.
Right.
And so like, you know, the review scores were like, it was like, no, this is completely unexpected. But yeah.
And the other crazy thing is like, it was published by Square Enix, I believe. And they put out, like, I cannot tell you how many commercials on television I saw for this game.
Dude,
on television, on the Xbox
Hulu
dashboard. Hulu had them?
Yeah, Hulu had them, like, every, like, you'd be watching it just every single time, and it almost sold me to buy the game, sort of thing.
I didn't buy it, but I want to, like, I want to play it, and I, like, the reason I waited was because I saw some of the review scores, and I'm like, well, I'm not gonna go pay $60 for this game that's just a good game.
Yeah.
Like, I'll wait until it goes down to, like, 40-30 and pick it up, you
right.
know?
Like, or, like, it's a renting game, something like
yeah,
that,
Yeah, it's not
too,
a
you
know? I have to play right now game.
Right. Right. And I mean, but arguably, like, this is a game that didn't do poorly or didn't seem like it was going to do poorly, like,
yeah.
by these traditional standards of, like, it comes out and nobody's talking about
it. Right. It shouldn't have been bad enough to put its studio out of business.
Correct.
You know?
But yeah, I mean, this is a kind of a middle tier developer, that sort of thing, not a super AAA, not a really big indie, that sort of thing.
So, you know, like, this comes on the heels of, I think, like, it could have been last week, a lot of news coming out of Crytek.
Yes.
Like, about, like, people aren't getting paid, and, like, that's a large studio.
Yeah.
Like, they put out quote-unquote AAA games. You know, they most recently put out Rise.
Yeah.
They got done with, when did Crysis 3 come out?
That was, I think, a year ago, something like that. I mean, it was last gen, like, in tail end of last gen.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, like, and if they've got a studio, I guess, I think it's supposed to be or was over 800 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and they're laying off people. So, like, this brings into question, you know, like, we're looking at the spectrum of game studios and games that are being released. And, you know, mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of people who complain about, like, just the amount of quote unquote indie titles, which just means, like, to me, like, that's come to mean a downloadable, smaller, shorter game that's done with a smaller team than a quote-unquote AAA title. Now, the crazy thing is, like, the AAA titles now have these huge teams. You have
gigantic teams that work all the time.
Assassin's Creed Unity has, I think, 16 teams within mm-hmm. Ubisoft working on it.
Right. They're all working on different
aspects. Ridiculous. You have Destiny, which is Activision, is like, they have come out and said that they have spent $500 million.
Yeah, sorry. On that budget.
$500,000 can't even buy you a screenshot.
Right.
$500 million on Destiny. So, like, and then you have, you know, something like Murder Soul Suspect comes out and shuts down its studio.
Well, and you've also got, like, companies like Activision, where you have multiple developers working year-round, and not even on, after the game comes out, they're not even just working on the next game, they're working on big DLC maps, and, like, they're coming out with these, I guess it's seasons of content, almost.
Right, so what we've got basically is, like, it's kind of a shift over the past few years, and I think we're kind of, like, we're still seeing it. Like, it's not going to go away. Like, we're seeing, like, the middle tier, like, developer that would make, you know, like, hey, we're going to make a certain Murder Soul Suspect game, and maybe it'll do well, maybe it won't, but hey, whatever, we'll make our money back. No, not anymore. Not with the costs that it takes to put it on next-gen platforms.
Well, and also you're looking at, like, the competition that you have in within those marketplaces, and these kind of middle tiers, despite the fact that they're getting, you know, placements on TV, placements on Hulu, all of those things, they're still going up against the, like, Titanfalls of the world, you know, and they're going up against these huge games with huge teams and huge budgets, $500 million budgets against it.
Right.
And that just in and of itself makes things difficult for those. Whereas indie markets, I feel like they're a little bit more, while it is completely saturated, but if you do have a truly cool, unique experience, like, it'll distinguish itself out from the crowd.
That kind of leads into the question that I would like to pose, you know, is this good, like, for our industry? You know, like, we don't have these middle tier developers anymore, but all those people who were working for those middle tier developers, and maybe they were really talented, like, two or three people have gone and formed these two or three person teams, and they're really talented, and they're putting out these smaller 5 to 6 hour, like, just games. And is that better? You know, like, is that better than just getting a halfway decent, you know, game like Murdered Soul Suspect that, you know, like, you're not super excited about? Could be good.
Didn't change the world. Didn't, exactly. Didn't shake anybody's, you know, what games mean, you know, whatever. I that's a really interesting question. I would go ahead and say, like, from my perspective, that it's probably neither good nor bad, just way different.
Yeah.
Which is hard, because it's like, I think initially we just react to change very instinctually, like that's negative. Like that's a negative thing where you have these developers that just kind of go away and you know, they're employees get disseminated throughout both, you know, these big AAA titles, and then they also spawn these really cool tiny indie studios.
Yeah.
You look at something like whenever with Activision, Vince Zampella and those guys, like, they split off and they made Respawn. And what came out of that, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's a, arguably that's a middle tier developer, but it's with a huge publisher.
Yeah,
and probably not middle tier anymore. Like after Titanfall was such a, it wasn't like the blowout success that I think we all expected it to be, right. But it was a really good success.
I think it would have been a larger success had it, at least commercially, had it been a multi-platform game and not just an Xbox exclusive.
Agreed. But
then again, I think that was a smart move on Microsoft's part. And I would still call them, you know, like they're more a middle tier developer.
Yes.
But they just partnered with EA.
Yeah,
you know,
with the second, what is that? The
second largest
publisher behind Activision. Yes.
And so, like, whenever I look at this, I see, like, okay, I agree. Instead of it's neither good nor bad, I see there is good and there is bad. So like what I see the good is the fact that you do have all these people who are in these indie studios, and you got like these really cool like ideas that get published that would never have gotten published before. You know, you've got like things like Thomas Was Alone, and even like Last Generation, you saw Limbo.
Gone Home.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Gone Home was like some BioShock developers, you know, like. And you see like all these cool indie titles. And as a result of that, you also see bigger publishers like Ubisoft saying to their, like, we're going to talk about Valiant Hearts. You know, that was a Ubisoft game. Like they told some of these people who made Far Cry 3, hey, you want to go make a game? Cool. I think that was that Child of Light?
I think it was Child of Light.
But still, even Child of Light.
But like, think about this. It's as if somebody, and what is interesting about that is, you know, with Ubisoft being such a huge publisher, it's like your best team or whatever approaching you and saying, hey, by the way, for the next, you know, year or so, we're going to dedicate our time to something other than your biggest hit.
Right.
You know, and so like just for them to be able to go, you know what, the environment and then this games industry that we're in right now, it's totally going to be valuable for you to do that.
I think there's that, but I also think that the success of these smaller indie titles force Ubisoft's, you know, like in this example, has, you know, forced Ubisoft's hand, because they're like, you know, this creator, these guys, talented people are saying, we want to make this smaller one. And Ubisoft is probably in the back of their mind saying, if we don't say yes, they're just going to quit and go do it themselves.
Right.
And we will not be able to work with them anymore. Like,
right.
They will have formed their own studio, become really successful. It behooves us to let them make this game. And we're getting better games, better smaller games from bigger developers now as a result of the success of these smaller indie titles. I mean, you think about Notch.
Yeah.
I mean, how many billions of dollars has he made?
So much
money, dude.
Dude, well, and not only that, it's like I've bought the thing on console. I bought the thing on my PC, my Mac.
And I'm going to buy it on Xbox One.
And it's like, yeah, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to upgrade to the Xbox One. If I had a Vita, I'd be playing it on Vita. I mean, it's like they're selling these things multiple places to me.
Yeah.
And it's worth it to me because you get that much out of it.
I think I've talked about the podcast
but
before.
But he's got to have so much cash. And he has, like, I mean, there's employees.
Yeah.
And there's people that have been there from forever. But he is the guy.
Yeah.
He is that.
And
that
it's cool
company.
To see, like, these you know, indie, quote-unquote, indie developers make all this money. You know, like, I've bought Limbo 3 different times. I've bought it on Xbox 360, my iOS device, and on Vita. No, 4 times, because I have it on my Mac as well. I haven't played it through. I'm going to do some Let's Plays. But, like, come on. Like, 4 times that I've bought this stupid game. And, you know, it's an indie game. You know, like, so that's the good.
Yes.
The bad, I think, is the fact that outside of these huge budgets, these, you know, any kind of, you know, a murdered soul suspect, like, that can't cut it. Like, it, you know, it's not going to succeed, you know, like, obviously. And, you know, outside of the $500 million budgets, we're not going to see any new IP, any big push, unless there's a lot of money behind it and a lot of time invested.
Well, you look at like Murdered Soul Suspect, and I think just, you know, whenever I mentioned the competition earlier, you also, I think there's a mentality of gamers and of consumers that a game like that is, or a game that's not a sequel, or a game that's not, you know, that just these big gigantic franchises or whatever that has a, you know, $500 billion push behind it. I think people see that and they say that shouldn't cost as much.
Yeah,
you know, that shouldn't cost the $60.
Or like what I did and said, hey, I'll wait for it to go down.
Exactly. You know, like, and so I think that that's also part of the a negative, I guess, a con to this situation is that consumers now expect a certain level of game for their $60-$50.
Yeah.
And whenever they don't get, like, you know, I mean, even the indies, like, you look at like Child of Light, that was a great game, lots of good gameplay. It wasn't like the super long RPG of past, but it was like, it was totally worth it.
Yeah.
And it cost what, $15?
Right.
And so you get something like that for $15, and then you know, you don't want to put a bunch of money into a Murdered Soul Suspect that is, you know, same amount of time gameplay wise. Right, and that maybe doesn't do as well with the narrative. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't feel like it's worth it.
Right.
But then the next Call of Duty, it's like, I'm sold.
And like, that's another point that, you know, good point, is the fact that because these games have such large budgets, now the studios have to be assured that they're going to make the money back on them. And
yeah.
So what are we going to see? More and more sequels, like more and more of the same thing. Like, we're going to have... And I love these games, but, you know, more Call of Duty, more Battlefield, more Far Cry. You're going to see more Assassin's Creed. Like, this week, they've already announced, you know, that, hey, there's another Assassin's Creed game in development. Obviously, I mean, we all knew that, but, like, usually it doesn't happen until
right.
after the current one's out. Like, we're 3 months out from the next one,
right?
And we're already announcing the one for 2015,
right?
Like, good grief.
Well, but you also see that, like, you know, leaks are more prevalent nowadays, and so announcing something super stinking early is like an effort to get ahead of something, I think.
But the thing is, like, is that good? Is the fact that, like, these large studios are spending all this money, but they're pouring all this money into something that is new, not new IP. It's
right.
all like rehashed material. And while we all enjoy these franchises,
I think cool narratives to still be told within those franchises.
Right. That stagnates the top of the industry.
It does.
I think there's a lot of innovation going on at the bottom of the industry.
Oh, man.
But, like, the top of the industry is just kind of like, we have to play it safe, we have to appeal to the mass consumer, and we have to make our money back, dang it.
Well, something I applaud Ubisoft of doing is saying, hey, yeah, we're going to let you guys do Valiant Hearts, or we're going to let you guys do Child of Light, because I feel like Activision wouldn't be caught dead doing anything like that.
Never.
You know, like, Treyarch comes up to them and says, like, the guys behind Treyarch are just like, hey, we want to make this cool little indie RPG, JRPG. No. Yeah. Never.
Right. And, you know, I don't know the financial... I know, you know, this is the... I don't know the financial situation at Activision. You know, like, I know that they make a lot of money, and they have, like, there's no debt. Like,
right.
They have piles and piles of cash. So they're obviously doing something business-wise right. The opposite is not necessarily true, but might possibly be true, you know, with Ubisoft. There was a story, I guess, last week that the Canadian government apparently subsidizes half of their costs. And they're going to not do that anymore.
Interesting.
And so there's this question of, well, can Ubisoft Montreal still exist? And, you know, without these subsidies. And so it's kind of like, you know, I don't know that without that kind of stuff, and I haven't seen their books, but
no.
Who knows? Maybe without that kind of stuff, they wouldn't have been able to do these smaller games.
Right. Well, and you also think
or
about
taking the chance.
Well, like I said, it's the $15 thing. It's like these games, I don't know how much time they put into development into these games, but it's like they're $15 games. And I think the more we see things being these inexpensive things, and I guess mobile gaming is also something, you get a game for free and, you know, you're able to put hours and hours into it.
Yeah.
And so people don't expect something that is like a Child of Light to be more than $15.
And that's the problem is, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, Child of Light and compare it to, you know, like another middle tier game that's about the same length. I guarantee, you know, something like Murdered Soul Suspect costs a lot more to make than Child of Light.
Oh, yeah.
And the same length, and, you know, possibly worse.
As a consumer, I'm sitting, you know, I chose to spend $15 and get tons of enjoyment out of Child of Light. Yeah. Whereas Murdered Soul Suspect, it was just like, man, that looks cool, but no.
Yeah.
You know, I won't spend that much money on it. You know? I won't spend that much money on that much thing. Because you look at like movies and it's like you spend, you know, 10, 12 bucks at the movies to go to for 2 hours or whatever. And whereas you can just buy Child of Light and get 12, 13 hours worth of enjoyment.
I mean, the other thing about, you know, like me as I, you know, get older and, you know, like my time is more fragmented, like I don't necessarily, sometimes I do. I crave like a 40-hour long experience.
Right.
But dude, the majority of the time, I just want to sit down and play like this game that I know I can play in a week, and I can get done in a couple playthroughs. Right. You know?
And you look at like Call of Duty and things like that, and that was the big appeal. Whenever you know, with Call of Duty and Titanfall, it's 10-minute matches. It's like if you have 10 minutes, match.
That's
you know?
That's the appeal of the multiplayer.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you look at Call of Duty, like they really take advantage of it this time, like or with Ghosts, like there's literally like less than a minute between each match.
Right.
Like you can't even get anything done.
It's like I go to customize a class and you're already loading
it's
into
just
the
match,
next
match, 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 match. They just want to keep you hooked, you know?
It's like that drug, just another hit, man. Just another
exactly.
hit. Exactly. But yeah, I don't know. You know, I think you've kind of convinced me that it's like, rather than it not being good or bad, there's good and bad. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know. I just, I like the indies. I think I like the way that this is shaping up because we had like Shovel Knight that just came out and it's like, this game takes the best of the NES era and like combines them all into its own original, huge, awesome game. Mm-hmm. And it's $15 and it's like, you know, the indie games are definitely, definitely just coming into their own. They're coming into their own like level of maturity. And we'll talk about it here in a second with Valiant Hearts, you know, how awesome the storytelling can be in indie games.
And I think the reason for that is because these really talented middle tier developers, they don't exist anymore. And so now all that talent has gone to the bottom and has, you know, not saying the bottom is bad, but you know, like have they gone to the, you know, bottom of the spectrum as far as like development costs
and team
size is gone. They've spread out. Right. Yeah. And so like, you know, whereas, you know, we used to see like, hey, this is an indie game and like that meant crap, you know, possibly like it was like rare, you know, like it wasn't rare, but you know, it was like, you know, if you really found a really good indie game like Braid or something like that, like that was like, wow, we found something like in the midst of all this junk, we found this amazing game. Like now we've got like amazing games all the time.
Yeah, you could probably like flip through your and every time you stop, it's like, well, that game's good.
Yeah,
you know, that sort of thing. It's like at least one out of every 10 indie games, I would say, is really worth playing, worth paying the money for.
I'm more than that.
I would say,
like,
I mean, you know, you look at even, you know, even on the marketplace right now, we've got games like Guacamelee, the new game that's like free with the Xbox Live
Gold.
And it's like
it's brand new. Yeah, well, this edition is brand new.
Right. This is the new brand new edition of it. And it's like, that is just superb, awesome stuff. And you're getting it for free.
Yeah. You've got, you know, games like that, games like Resogun, games like Strider, which is free on PlayStation 4 right now.
Right.
Like, man, I mean, these are just good games, and I don't think that would have gotten these otherwise.
No.
You know, like if the middle hadn't fallen out, we wouldn't have these games.
Right, and I think that's something to be said, and I think the storytelling is maturing a lot within those games, and it's just a lot better in that genre.
Valiant Hearts,
The Great War. That was good. We didn't even plan that. That was like a stroke of genius there. I don't know what happened.
Telepathy.
Dude. Yeah, telepathy.
Yes. Telepathy?
I don't know.
I think it's telepathy.
It is telepathy.
Okay.
Wait, you didn't intentionally like mispronounce it?
I did the first time, and then you mispronounced it the second time. That made me question my own beliefs.
That happens all the time. Okay, so Valiant Hearts, man. Okay, so I finished this thing over the weekend. I tweeted about it whenever I finished it up.
Yeah.
You finished it last night.
Yep.
And this is a game that I've been anticipating for a long time.
When did we see that first trailer?
It was back January. I think it was like January. It was winter time.
Are you sure it wasn't last E3?
Oh my gosh!
Like a year ago?
I don't know. We might have seen like in a you know, montage of some sort.
Yeah.
Where it was running around in there. But I think the main, like the first trailer that I remember seeing was sometime in like December or January, around Christmas time.
Mm.
And it just felt like the game that I wanted.
Yeah.
It felt like it was this, you know, intense kind of narrative driven thing.
Right.
And
so let's, like, what this is a side scrolling, like basically like a game based in World War One.
Yeah.
And like, in the, you know,
well, I'll post, embed the,
I'll put
the trailer.
Yeah. I'll put the trailer and, side scroller done in the UBR engine, which powers Rayman Origins, Child of Light. And
yeah.
So it's all like hand drawn kind of art. And, it focuses on World War One and these people's stories that intertwine with each other.
Yes, and it's based on real letters from World War One.
Yeah, or I guess yes, the game's creator he found some old letters from I guess his great great grandfather or something like that, and was like, man, like this is cool the way that you know like you can see these people's stories through the letters, and so let's base a game around that.
Yes,
Yeah.
I guess whenever it first came out, I kind of looked at some reviews and some numbers and things like that. And a lot of the reviews were kind of like these weird middle of the road things. And it's like, I was kind of anticipating, you know, a mixed response to it myself. But as I played through this thing, I just kept falling more and more in love with it.
Yeah, dude.
And so like these sevens and sixes and stuff that it got, it's like, I don't know what these people were thinking this game was going to be.
Yeah.
But you know, it was everything that I wanted it to be.
Yeah, so let's just talk about it for a second. We'll do some spoiler-free stuff, and we'll let you know before we jump into some spoilers. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, this was literally the everything I wanted. You know, like, so it's based in World War One, and, you know, like, there are puzzles, but they're never, like, overwhelmingly hard. There was one that got me crazy confused, and I had to look up how to do it.
Wait, you looked one up?
No, I used the hints. There's a hint system.
Yes, there is a hint
system. And so I used the hints to figure it out. Like the rest of the time I tried not to use the hints.
Yeah.
I was actually afraid there would be an achievement for that and like I was going to mess it up if I used a hint, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
and so like it has all these puzzles. It has a lot of collectibles, and what's really cool about the collectibles and as you go through the story, like they do a really good job of giving you a sense of where you're at in history and the history behind each, not only scene, but each object that you find. You know, it'll be like here, like you've picked up a German dog tag. German dog tags looked like this at the beginning of the war, but later on they began to be more unified and they had this information on them. Or it'd be like, here's a,
it would give you good settings too. And this was something that was interesting to me. Like, and I guess I went through the game and experienced it slightly different maybe than they wanted you to, but I liked the idea that you could do it different ways. Like you could experience all of the stuff at once. Like as soon as you pick up the collectible, you look it up.
Oh yeah.
And then, or as soon as you get to a new place, a new, letter unlocks or a new journal entry unlocks and you read it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't really go through and do it that way. I kind of played through in chapters. Like it's set into like four chapters. And after each chapter, before I began the next one, I would go back and look at all of the collectibles, all of the historical facts and all of the diary entries. So it's like, I had this kind of and that's kind of what I do with Batman as well. Like at the whenever I do like a Batman Arkham Origins or a Batman Arkham City, whenever I pick up collectibles, I don't really look at them right that second.
Yeah.
Even though that does give you like really good context and stuff, most of the time I'm so enthralled with what I'm doing that I just want to advance the story. So I kind of go back after I sit back and at the end of the night or whatever, I kind of go back and look and go, oh my gosh, yes.
There were also these like in each stage there were I don't know what you would call them, but they are basically scenarios where it would describe, okay, this is what trenches were like. Did you read those? Because those were you can't access those after you're out of that level.
I read them as I kind of went. At the end, like before I kind of wrapped up the final puzzle or like as I felt like I was going through, I would go back and look at that.
Yeah.
But it all kind of happened in this kind of disjointed way where they didn't pop up and I didn't look at them as it happened.
The thing that I like about it is they're there, but it doesn't force you to listen to look at them.
Right.
And if you don't look at them, it in no way detracts from the story that they're telling.
Correct.
I think it detracts from the overall experience because like this is basically like we're talking about like history and so it like gives you the backstory to all these settings.
Yes.
Like so whenever you're running through this city that you're in, you know that hey, this has been bombed, you know, by the Germans because it's a good strategic point and this happened, you know, like at this point in the war because this. And it's just like, man, this is like it's just so cool. it's something that you don't find in games a lot. Something that actually feels like it means something, and you're, you know, learning something, and it's fun at the same time.
Right. And I think that was the very first thing that kind of drew me in, was that it was behind these historical facts, and it had this element of like intellectualism to it, where you have you have all sides of your brain activated. You're solving puzzles, but you're not only just solving puzzles, you're learning about things at the same mm-hmm. time. So it's like, this is a game that relates to World War I as well, which honestly is not like if you want to put it, a popular war,
right,
by any means. It's like, you know very little about it in media. It really doesn't pop up that often.
Yeah.
The best scenario that I can think of, or the best type of media that has covered it, has been Downton Abbey, which, if you guys have watched that, it's a wonderful show. You guys should watch it. But it kind of goes between this time period where it starts before the war, mm-hmm. and then the war happens a couple seasons in.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's the only thing that really has ever exemplified to me in a media form how intense World War I is, mm-hmm. and how much it affected the world as we know it.
Right.
So, I mean,
without diving into too much, like, without World War I, World War II would not have happened.
Right.
You know, and so, like, it, and we think about how much, you know, World War II has affected the entire world, the modern day world.
Culture,
you
know, how, like, we look at movies, like, I mean, all that.
Everything, you know, like, and so, you know, if you go back and back and back, like, that's what basically kicked the series of events that led us into World War II. So, like, really, World War I is what, you know, kind of started ushering in the modern age and
right.
things like that. And so it's really cool. Let's talk about the puzzles for a second.
Dude. I'm not a huge, like, okay, so I am not a huge, like, puzzler guy.
Yeah.
Like, and you've played through Limbo, you just said, you know, so you've done probably way more puzzlers than I have.
Yeah.
Puzzle platformers, that kind of thing.
Right.
But, I never really had a major problem with any puzzles. Like, and I think that was some of the main criticisms with other reviews and things like that, was that the puzzles weren't hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, where you look at a game like Pushmo or something like that literally just cranks up difficulty to unreal levels.
Or Super Meat Boy.
Yeah, Super Meat Boy. Or I feel like, to some extent, we look at these games like puzzlers nowadays, and they're meant to not be beaten.
Correct.
Like, they are meant to still always have that one thing that's holding over your head where it's like, you didn't get this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a push from, like, there's, you know, you think about, there's a large part of, like, the RPG community, I guess it would be RPG community, that, you know, likes things like Dark Souls, where it's like, you know, this is just incredibly hard. You're going to want to, you just literally pull your teeth out before you, like, beat this game, you know, like, and things like Super Meat Boy that are super, super hard. Now, that's not really a puzzler. I guess that's just more of a platformer. But, like, it comes from that same side of gamers. And it's like, you know, where they really hold on to this idea that old school games used to be incredibly hard. And they did. But, you know, like, there were also ways around that. You know, like, a Sonic the Hedgehog level, it was hard. But you could also, like, run straight through it half the time once you learned it. Or, like, you could...
Well, even something like Mega Man, where it's like, that is really... You know, sometimes they were very challenging stuff.
Yeah.
It never really... got to the point where you feel like Mega Man is looking at you and going, yeah, in your face, you can't beat this.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it was still fun. And so, like, I think, you know, whenever we look at puzzlers, I like it whenever games teach you how to beat them.
Yes.
And gradually up the ante. Now, I will say, like, on the scale of puzzlers, this game is on the lower scale. It never really reaches the point where... you're like, man, all the things that I've been learning along the way have led me to this point, like Limbo does. Limbo, like,
right.
If you jump straight, like, a while, ways back, you know, I jumped straight into, like, the last chapter, and I was like, I don't even remember how to do this. Like, you forget the skills that it teaches you, you know?
Yeah.
And while there wasn't that aspect of this one,
no,
it was still incredibly fun.
Yes.
It never got stale. And it would build upon itself.
And and just whenever you think, okay, well, if this keeps up, you know, much longer, it's like, okay, but then it brings in a different type of a puzzle or a different type of a scenario that is more like reaction based or like memory based or whatever.
Yeah, like that's all. It was amazing. You know, like, they had these, like, things where you had to do, like, these, basically, I guess, a cipher. You know, like, basically, kind of figure out, okay, this symbol means this, and like, decode something, and then you'll jump into something that's kind of like a Guitar Hero kind of button mashing, like, along a timeline thing.
Right. There was cool, really, really cool moments, and this doesn't spoil any part of the story, but there's a really cool moment where you're, like, in a vehicle, and then, like, bombs are dropping around you, and you have to kind of dodge these bombs and stuff. But it's set to these classical pieces of music.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
And it's just really funny that they did this thing.
It's the, like, what is that? The one that's like, bum, 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 bum,
oh,
that
dude.
One.
Yeah, dude. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
All I can think of is the Pinky and the Brain whenever they covered it, and it was like about cheese.
What song is that?
I don't remember, but I can't remember the title of it. But they had the Flight of the Bumblebee at one point.
They did. I forgot about that. Yeah, that was good.
Da-da-da-da. You know. Yeah, and so anyway, but they just incorporate these really unique and like quirky gameplay aspects that I just wouldn't have even thought about.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't expect. So it keeps you fresh the whole time.
Yeah, you don't expect a lot of what happens in this game, and like that's what was surprising and kept me hooked. Was like every single scene or new, like you'd jump from character to character, and I'm like, holy cow, like that we're doing this now, you know?
Yeah.
I think it all was also, there were some of my favorite parts. We can talk about this later, but I'll mention it here. There's some stealth aspects to it.
Yes.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
There's some action aspects to it, and even the action was really cool.
Oh man.
I really enjoy the art style. It was very comic booky, mm-hmm. and even felt like that sometimes. The only technical glitches I encountered, and I'll see if you did too. There was
a couple of them.
There was two.
I think I had three.
There was one time whenever it was, I guess, pulling back from a scene, and you saw like these blue edges around the outside of the screen, like it pulled back too far.
Yes.
And then on like the one of the at the end of each chapter, they have like this screen that just says Valiant Hearts, the Great War, and there was this like this big gray like part of a scene that came floating down into it and like pulled back out.
I didn't have that happen.
It was like, you know, somebody keyframed something wrong and like it just came in, you know, and it was like,
yeah,
it was weird.
I don't think that happened to me. I do remember the blue screen part, but I remember there was a couple of others. There's one where they kind of mix like that hand-drawn style with some kind of polygonal style things in there. And there was one time whenever that patch, like going from the polygonal flag to the flagpole that was hand-drawn, didn't quite mesh. Like there was one line that still was exposed, and I was just really like, that's really nitpicky, let's just be honest.
I mean, this stuff's really nitpicky whenever you have games like Arkham Origins that just crash, you know,
that whenever it launches it's borderline broken, like Battlefield 4 or whatever. You know,
or was that 4?
Yeah,
it was 4. Yep.
But yeah, so you know, these are very very small things. But yeah, I mean, as far as technical aspects, I didn't experience anything other than those three that I, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
It was very responsive for all the puzzles, I thought.
Yeah.
I
think mainly for me, like the puzzles and what kept me going most of the time throughout the entire game was that I felt like this was a story that I had to drive. Like this was a narrative that I wanted to experience. Like this game was a game that had something to say, and I wanted to listen to it all the way. And I think it very much had a unified vision to it, where it didn't feel like there was this kind of scatterbrained thing. It all built to the endings of each of the characters' kind of plots and storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't quite know at any given point what you were building towards, but you wanted to get there.
Right.
I think the setup was really, really well done for each character,
mm-hmm.
that you truly did feel like this was the only way that it could have ended.
It was very well written.
Yes.
And the characters were very relatable and endearing.
Yes.
And even in the art style, you know, like it's very cartoony and very kind of cutesy, but it was also very tactile feeling. And it just grabs you grabs your emotions by the bootstraps and just like rattles it around.
Yeah.
And like it just whoops you back and forth for like you're really happy and you're really, really excited and you're nervous and then you're like sad and all this kind of stuff. And so I really enjoyed the story. I thought they did a great job with that. The music.
Oh man, dude, the music was, I literally looked for the soundtrack.
I did too.
It doesn't exist right now. Hopefully it will come out. I know that with Child of Light, the soundtrack came out right around the same time that the game did.
Yeah, I thought it was like the same week.
It might've been like the next Tuesday or something the next week. But there was, you know, there was like whenever you pop up the menu to read the letters, the main theme is being played really, you know, quietly on this, on a piano. It's just like, oh my gosh, you know, just kind of toying with your emotions the whole time with this music. And, you know, there's an aspect to the game that you experience, you know, like I said, intellectually and, you know, and emotionally as well.
Yeah.
And the music was a big part of the emotional aspect.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like, you know, my wife walked through, you know, like, and, like I went to one of those screens where you're reading about one of the items you pick up. And Dee Dee just stopped and she's like, man, the music is really good. I'm like, yeah, it's really good. She's like, it's like Pride and Prejudice. Like, yeah, it is.
It's exactly like that.
You know, and it's just like, man, I don't get that. I like the music in games, but you don't get those kind of reactions very often from, you know, like people who don't necessarily like delve deep into, you know, video game music.
Right. And I remember back on the very first trailer, they used Ludovici Einaudi. He's a piano player. They used one of his pieces. And so this music, I don't know if it was him playing it, but it was very much in that vein. Mm-hmm. And he writes music for, you know, different types of mediums. And you hear it like even during the Olympics or whatever, some of the commercials, it's just this kind of really emotionally building stuff. And so it very much plays into that aspect. And that's kind of some of my favorite music to chill out and to kind of just kind of like listen to and just let it affect you.
Yeah.
And so like just this game, I would totally listen to that soundtrack aside, like outside of any of the gameplay or whatever. So
yeah. So before we jump into the story, which will spoil some things, definitely this is you need to play this game. Like,
oh yeah.
If I honestly don't think there's any caveats, you know, like if you like this, then you'll blah, 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 blah. Like this is just a good game.
I think you need to go into it not expecting the hardest like puzzler in the world.
And this is very much, you know, like, this is not one of those games you're going to have to grind away at. This is an experience, and it really wants you to, and gives you the opportunity to experience it in a very methodical and unusually deep way.
Mm-hmm. For sure. There is one thing, I mean, about the historical facts that we mentioned earlier. Some of those, like, whenever one of them was brought up in the storyline, it really just, it clicked with me. I mean, that was the moment where it was just like, man, this war was real. This war was ridiculously bloody. And this, you know, it just hit me all of a sudden. And so like, it has those moments in it too, where it's just all of a sudden it'll take you by surprise.
Something I didn't notice, you know, or mention, like you look at these, things you pick up and like, it tells you this historical fact that's text-based, but it also has an accompanying picture. And so like a lot of these are like, these are real pictures from World War One. Most of them have been colorized, but like these are pictures like from that time period, and it really helps just pull you into the time and place that they are dealing with.
Yes, exactly. I'm ready to spoil this thing.
All right. So if you don't want to be spoiled, we're going to talk about the story. We won't do a spoiler clock.
No.
But we're getting ready to talk about it. So
pause it until you play it. All right. So Chris.
Yeah.
What level did you get stuck on? This has been weighing on me since you mentioned it. Like, which one did you use the hint on?
Okay,
what was going on?
The first time you encounter a door with a combination lock.
Ah, yes.
That stupid thing.
Okay.
Because I didn't understand, and I still don't know what it was doing. Like, it had a Roman numeral, and then it had, like, some other number, an actual real numerical number.
Right.
And, I don't even know. Like I waited until it just told me. Like what it does is it gives you hints, and then like it gives you hints in 3 minute successions.
That took me forever, dude.
Did you look at the hints?
I did not. Like, I solved it.
How do you solve it?
Okay, so you solve it by like the Roman numeral was like the order that you put them in. And
that's
then,
what I tried.
But I don't know. All I know is like whenever I ended up finally getting it, it was like it just clicked with me and I was like, oh my gosh. But then the one that like I had trouble with, there's one later on where I didn't realize you had to raise the flag in order to
Window? Cipher. That was cool. Well, by that point I was like, this is dumb. And I had found that flag and I was carrying it around for no reason.
Yeah.
I had found it earlier.
Oh.
And I was just carrying it around and I was like, oh, I can put this on the flagpole.
Yeah.
And so I ran out there and did it and realized that like lined up with the
numerals on the or the numbers on the flag.
But what was funny is like the two ones we both got stuck on, they're both combination locks.
Yep.
The same kind of weird puzzle.
Yep. And that's the only time you really encounter those combination locks. So it was just very, very strange things that I think they just put in there to delay you a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the one statistic that I wanted to say that like surprised me.
Yeah.
There was the one place that you go to. I don't know if I could pronounce the name. But they said that the main portion of that battle lasted for 3 months.
Oh yeah.
And it amounted to like they broke down the math of like how many people died.
Yeah.
And it broke down to one person every minute for 3 months.
Yeah.
And like that just kind of blew me away all of a sudden. I was like, oh my goodness, there's that. First of all, that there's that many people within these trenches where they can, you know, kind of blow through that many people. And, you know, it's happening.
Right.
And then also to the point where it's just like, you know, that didn't obviously happen spread out like that, where it's not like just every minute somebody else dies. It's like this happened in a series of battles and pushes and that sort of thing. So just nuts.
Yeah. Like
kind of made it real.
It's honestly, I guess, you know, the only reason that people don't make movies about World War One is because World War Two happened. And there were, you know, like World War Two was a big example of like the entire world mobilizing. There was, you know, like a group who was like basically, you know, you view as pure evil. And you know, like it's very glamorized and used.
There was also a lot of movement, like of the fronts and things. Whereas, like,
this is just like a bunch of people sitting in the trenches.
Yeah, they're just sitting in trenches, and it's like you pop your head up, and you know that's it.
But the crazy thing is, you know, like, you know, and this game illustrates it and tells you how it fits in. Is, you know, like that this was the war that brought, you know, like this is the first time people used tanks, first time they used machine guns in war, first time they used chemical weapons were used, first time flamethrowers were used, first time planes were used.
Obviously, they had to invent gas masks.
Yeah, exactly. And so like all this, like first time barbed wire was used on this scale.
Right.
You know, like the only other quote unquote modern war of this time period was the Civil War, you know, like literally almost 50 years earlier. And, you know, like, so, you know, and while there was a lot of bloodshed in the Civil War, Europe's, the past last wars that they had fought was like the Napoleonic War. So they were, you know, like,
right,
and you've they got didn't cannons see the, yeah, and horses yeah, and swords.
I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's like you're looking at a completely different type of war, and you're looking at, you know, casualties that probably didn't reach anywhere near the numbers that they reached in World War One. So it's
and I think that that's why it happened, because like they didn't necessarily expect this level of bloodshed.
Right,
you know, you used to march out into a field and fire some bullets that may or may not hit the enemy, and like, you know, you figure out who won, and. But like this was not that. This was not. This was very bloody and real and horrifying.
Yeah, and I guess whenever you end up building up to that final rush, that final push, where you're kind of pushing forward with your men that you picked up out of this, you know, they're already injured. It looked like.
Yeah.
You know, they all have kind of bandages. They're all kind of hodgepodge of guys that you basically picked.
Yeah.
And then I literally remember thinking, man, this level's. Like this level's getting ridiculously long, intense, and like you begin seeing like an aesthetic, artistic change throughout the level as well as things go. You see more reds, you see more, you know, explosions, you see more bloodshed and that sort of thing. And obviously, it's kind of cartoony, but it's still there's blood.
Yeah, I mean, this game doesn't pull any punches. You know, it doesn't shield you from anything. Like if something terrible happens, you see it happen.
Right.
And like you said, like it is done in a very kind of comic strip. Cartoony way, but it doesn't feel cartoony. It's very serious.
You know, and the one thing I will say is that you as a character only kill one thing in the game.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
I thought that was good too, but then at the end in his final letter, he mentions, you know, I never wanted to kill anybody. You know, it's like I just wanted to get through it, you know. Right. And so and even in some of the letters, you know, he would say, "Hey, I hope I don't have to kill anybody."
Well, and
it was a different character that said that, you know.
And I think that, you know, that's something that, especially people of those wars, you know, like, because it's like, well, I don't want to do this necessarily, but like, I'm not going to, like, this guy's going to kill me if I don't kill him. So it's just a very matter of fact, well, you know, I have to do it.
Right.
And so.
Even to the point where the guy and his son-in-law, like his son-in-law wrote a letter and he said, "Man, I saw him today. I always prayed that we would not be in the same battle, like that we wouldn't come up against each other."
Well, it's because they're on opposite sides.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And something also that going, you know, from watching like Downton Abbey and stuff like that, even the upper class of that time period were very much affected and very much, you know, were, you know, brought into the war and brought into that bloodshed, and you were made equal with the, you know, the working class.
Yeah.
Because you're all in these trenches together.
Right. Every man had to fight, you know.
Exactly.
And it, you know, talked about how you know, entire families worth of men would be wiped out. And the same thing happened in World War II.
Right.
But, you know, like that's just what happens whenever, like, you've got war in your country. You know, like, it's different. Right. And I think, you know, something that we look at with curiosity sometimes, you know, being in America, is the fact that, like, the last war that was fought on our soil was the Civil War. And, like, that's really far removed. And, like, it's different. It's one thing whenever war is in a faraway land and you like are shipping people there. It's entirely different whenever it's like on your soil and mm-hmm. it's happening in your towns.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, whenever you're actually directly being affected, which is partially, you know, maybe why, you know, World War II, because while it was, you know, we were attacked directly, that sort of thing. And whenever we do get attacked directly in America, it affects us. So it's like you, whenever you imagine doing that on an everyday for years,
yeah,
where these things are happening, it's like that's the scale that this is at. I did love Anna being in this game and being part of the action. That was an amazing, like, I always loved whenever it would like jog over to her, like the, you know, not only just
the nurse,
the gameplay, yes, the nurse where she's going out and healing people. But just the fact that like her story early on, like I said, it just grabbed me because it's like she's just sitting there and she, you know, her was it her father that had been sent to war, mm-hmm. and she was like, hey, I don't want to just sit here and do nothing,
right?
And so she, you know, found a way to get to the front lines, and then
yeah.
beyond that, she said, I've got to get closer to the front lines, yeah. and into one of the journal entries, you know, it's like I've got to find my way to the front because that's where they need me the most.
Yeah, what this game, you know, like a lot of games will do right by the main characters and primary characters, but this did very well by the secondary characters, like, you know, like is it Emil's family?
Yes.
Is he the German soldier?
No, Hans was the German soldier.
Hans, but Emil is like his son-in-law.
Father-in-law. Yes. Emil was the father-in-law. Right. It's his daughter, and then her right. husband was so, the
like,
German.
You know, but you don't see the daughter or the kid, but like they're still a very real part of the story, like whenever you're reading their diaries. And for characters that don't speak and have very little screen time,
yeah.
you really become attached to these secondary characters through the letters. And it's just like, man, like they did a phenomenal job fleshing out these secondary characters better than, you know, some like
AAA games.
Exactly.
I mean, and far better than some AAA games. And they handle the seven characters or that you have the main characters.
Is it seven total?
I think there's, well, if you count the dog, I think it would be seven, I think.
I thought it was, so I think you control four, right?
Four?
So there's Emil, there's Hans, there's the American guy.
Oh, what was his name?
I don't remember his name. And then you can control the nurse.
Yes.
Those four.
The four, yes. And then there's the dog as well.
There's the dog. So. Yeah, as far as let's kind of run down the characters, like as yeah. far as they go. You know, like we already talked about the nurse a little bit.
Yes.
Emil, like he is, like basically Hans gets shipped off first.
Right.
He has to go fight for Germany.
Well, actually, they just kick him out of the country. Like,
right.
They say, German. Hey, you're German and we're in a conflict with you, your country. Let's kick you out, which is a like crazy thing that we yeah. wouldn't experience most of the time these days. You experience, you know, some maybe stereotyping or whatever while you're, but you wouldn't necessarily get just kicked out of your country.
No, I mean, but you know, like that kind of stuff even went on in World War II, you know,
yeah,
like
for
with
sure.
the Japanese out in yeah. the Western states got put in these camps,
concentration
you know?
Camp things.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they were basically not like, you know, people weren't getting gassed.
That's true.
But yeah, they were work camps basically, you
right.
know? And so, I mean, it doesn't, knowing history, it doesn't surprise me. No, you know, that stuff happened. It's just like, you know, it did happen. And it's not something that we relate to right now.
Right.
You know?
And it's not something that you typically see in a narrative, yeah. in any form, you know, where no. it's like, you look at who was it? I think it was Greg Pak, who is a comic book writer. And he's mentioned where he's like, you know, a lot of times, you know, people will not insert characters who, you know, have these things, these unique things happen with them,
yeah.
Because they feel like they're not relatable, because it's not that sort of, and this does not shy away from any of those.
Yeah.
His argument is that you can make them relatable because you're the writer, you're the creator
right.
of this. You can, you know, it's your job to make them relatable. And that very much happened where it's like, hey, this is a situation, especially with him, mm-hmm. you know, where he's on the German side of things, and we don't usually put people like in a storytelling aspect, you don't usually put them on, you know, the losing side of history.
Yeah.
And play as
and
them.
And see it from their perspective.
Right. And kind of humanize them in those ways. While, you know, he didn't really want to fight, you know, for them and, you know, that sort of thing. And none of the characters really wanted to fight at all.
Right. They just wanted to live their lives.
They just wanted to continue living. Yeah. And I think that, you know, as well, like that serves to unify the theme.
Yeah.
But you know, just not shying away from those like situations where it's like, we, you know, don't experience those, you know, just shying away from those. They didn't do that. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I really connected with, you know, each character had their own kind of mission. And, you know, I wish I could remember the American guy's name. But he had this mission of killing this
Baron von something.
And, like this guy, he's very, stereotypical, this German Baron and of the skies, and he's in this dirigible. And those were some of the most awesome action sequences in the game. And like, they really got your blood pumping, you know, like more than, an action sequence in, you know, something like, Spider-Man or Batman or something like that. Like, it really got you, like, you're into the action, and it really feels like, man, I really have to beat this person because of the personal mission of this character. You really, what you're doing, you connect it with the character's, goals more than a lot of other games.
Like, oh, yeah. And even if their goals, like I said, even if their goals are completely outlandish and it's like, yeah, you know, that sort of thing, it's like you totally connect with them.
Right.
It was Freddy is his name.
Freddy. Yeah. You're right.
And the relationship between Freddy and Emil was really awesome too, that they yeah, kind of, they
fight together.
Yeah. They fight together and they rescue each other, save each other's lives. And, yeah, and the way that whenever they introduce you to him with this kind of narrative, or narrator where he says, and he's, you know, was about to meet someone who'd become his best friend or something like yeah, that. And it's just like the way they introduce you to these characters is it, it very much solidifies their, you know, their relationships.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Like, we should have talked about how they communicate with each other. So there's a narrator. The way the story is told is crazy. There's a narrator. You just do random gameplay things. They communicate in like bubble pictures.
Yep.
They also,
they say weird, like just one word
mumble
phrases.
Words. Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, and obviously most of the, like there's the French people, there's the German people, but then right, you know, Freddy is the only American. And so every once in a while you would hear him mutter like a
good job.
Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. And so
come over here, puppy.
And then you have the historical things. And so it's like, it's this huge web of storytelling. And the crazy thing is they have these four characters and they intertwine and their stories intersect and intersect with these, all these secondary characters in ways. I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, this is like as complex as Game of Thrones. Like, you know, I mean, that show gets confusing for sure. And I was like, man, this is getting to a level of like, they had to have had like this huge map of like strings going everywhere. Like this person meets this blah, 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 blah.
Well, and the way that they paced it too, where they would go back in time sometimes. And even whenever, like after I played through it, yeah, I looked at like going back into some of the levels and things,
yeah,
to find some more of the collectibles that I had missed early yeah, on. And it shows you the years that each chapter timeline takes place. Yeah. The timeline. And so, and they overlap.
All of them do.
Yeah. They all overlap. And so like you have these timelines that you want to experience. Hey, what is, what's Anna doing while Freddy and Emil are doing their thing over here? What's Carl doing whenever they're doing their thing over here? And yeah, sometimes these will happen broken over different chapters, but each chapter came to an emotional point and it was like, that was definitely where you wanted the chapter to end. But you know, the story would go on and they would overlap.
One of my favorite parts was at the end of the second chapter whenever you learn that Carl is dead.
Yes.
And then it jumps back in time and you play as Carl. You're escaping from this prisoner of war
right,
camp. And that's the stealth stuff I was talking about.
Oh,
like,
that's awesome.
Not only was the gameplay really cool, the fact like you have to hide in these bushes and use a scarecrow like through a field to get
through. Oh, man, that was the best.
And then like they're shooting these flares up in the sky and you can only move whenever the flares are
dark, gone.
Yeah. And whoa. And the cool thing was like, because they've already told you that Carl dies.
Right.
You get to the, like, you're totally expecting to like get into some kind of crazy no-win scenario whenever Carl
dies.
Just bites it.
Yeah.
And
you think you get into that.
You do think you get into it, but you, at the last second, switch dog tags with another person.
With a dead body.
That's why that they think you're dead. And that's what I was like, man, not only did they set you up for this, they did it well enough that you don't see it coming.
Right.
You know, and the other crazy thing is they illustrate the fact that in World War One, like since it was a slower moving war, the opposite side. So, like, say the Germans captured or killed someone, they would let the other side know
yeah,
that hey, we've got so and so, And they're like, okay, cool. You know, whereas other wars, you're like, you don't know where they're at. They're right. They're missing in action and POWs, and you don't know where, like, even if they're alive. Well, you would know they're alive. They're mailing you letters from the other side.
Right.
It's just like, we're in this war with each other, but yet, you know, the Postal Service is still going.
Right.
And it's just like, this is crazy. And, like, a lot of game, like, that's just a level of depth that they had to think about this game to actually incorporate it into the story and gameplay.
For sure, man. For sure. And like that happened, but then at the end as well, where there's this, like I said, there's this situation where he's, you know, you basically pick these guys, and as you do that final push, each Who's one of them this? Dies. Emil.
Emil was doing that?
Yeah, the main guy.
Oh yeah, he did. He picked those guys.
Right, he picked those guys, and it's like each one dies doing this big service for you, and as you push forward, and this was the, you know, quote, the another one of the pushes that will win the war. Mm-hmm. And it's like so many people were dying as you were going through.
Yeah.
And at the very end of it, it's like, nope, this is over.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know, like, okay, so at the end of this, this guy would like hide behind you guys for you know, these big pushes, these deadly pushes as your team members are dying and stuff. And then he would come up and be like, no, keep going, you know, to you, and yell at you.
Right. To motivate you.
Yes. But he was not a part of the action. But he would come up to you and yell at you, basically. And there's at one point where it's like literally everyone except for you and this, like, a couple of other guys are dead. Mm. And he yells at you. And I was like, what, can I hit this guy? You know, it's like, I just need to end this now.
Yeah.
And I hit him, and I realized, and then it kind of freeze frames, and it's like, I realized I did exactly what the story wanted me to do without even, like, knowing that the story was going to take me there.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I'm going to hit this guy and the story's going to be over. I didn't know that was going to happen. I just was like, no, I need to hit this guy to end this, you know?
Yeah, like, it makes especially that part, but then there were other times, and it's crazy. Like, it makes you do exactly what it wants you to do without telling you what it wants you to do.
Exactly.
Like, this guy's just so annoying and ticks you off so much. You're just like, I just need to punch this guy. And, like,
right.
Oh man,
that's exactly what they wanted you to do all along.
It's amazing, dude.
Yeah, and that part of it, like, that's a game device we don't see very often. We're over tutorialized, you know, where it's like you have this tutorial that tells you how to do this, or like on Modern Warfare or something like this, on like Call of Duty, you were prompted at the bottom, hey, what to do here, what to do in this situation. Whereas everything to this point has led me to be like, I want to like hit this guy on the head and try to get this over with.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you want to kill him, but it's like, you just want to, you know, see if we can take out some anger
and
on this guy.
You know, like, they take you to a very emotional, cause you have that emotion, like, and you did it, like, you made the choice to do it. And then, you know, Emil ends up getting court-martialed and executed for that.
Right.
And it's just like, by the time you hit that, you're like, you've been raked over the coals so much emotionally. Like, honestly, like, I teared up. Like, I don't tear up at that many games. Like, no. I said, like, The Walking Dead season one, like, totally just, like, that affected me like no other game has. I teared up at that game.
Yeah.
This one is the second game I've ever teared up at. Man. And, like, even, you know, never mind. I don't want to spoil other games. But other games that I could have, like, they're emotional and they weigh on you, and you think about them for a while and, like, right. let it live with you. But, like, not very many games affect me like that strongly emotionally.
Well, yeah, and whenever all that was happening, I was literally sitting there thinking, nope, this would be me. Like, if I was in his situation, because I made that choice.
Yeah.
Because I literally, you know, I did it. You know, it was like, this was me, you know? And so, yeah, and that definitely, you know, just kind of affects you. It can't not affect you.
Right.
And so that was probably my favorite part about this game, was the fact that the narrative was so well designed and so focused on leading you to one point.
Mm-hmm.
And once that point was made, it didn't, you know, beat you to death with it, but it just kind of let you live with your own choices, or let you have it, you know?
Right. Did you watch through the end credits?
Yes.
What was that? What was the cut scene in the middle with the American? Like, I was in the, I thought it was like, oh, the credits are going to roll. And so I stepped out.
Right.
Of the
okay.
room.
So what it was, basically he was standing there, and then these, like, warships came up.
Mm.
And so I don't know if it was setting up a sequel, but I think it was that while these characters' stories have ended, it said the war is hungry, you know? The war is still hungry, I think was what the quote was on screen. Because
it doesn't take you up to the very end of the war. Like, it never ends. And I like how it kind of jumps in after it's already started.
Right.
And it ends before it actually ends.
Right. And I think that's what the point was that, hey, but the war wasn't actually over.
Yeah.
You know, while your character in this particular story is over, the war was still hungry.
Yeah.
Hungry for more, you know?
Great game, man.
Gosh, so good.
Like, on so many levels. And I think as I let this live with me, I'm going to go back and like find the rest of the collectibles. I think I counted, I missed about 30 of them over all the span of the whole game.
I think I missed about 25, so yeah.
And then there's a couple, like two other, I need to get all the collectibles and two other achievements, and I have all the achievements for the game.
Right on.
And but I can see myself, you know, in 6 months to a year coming back and playing this game.
Yeah.
And kind of almost becoming like a Limbo has to me, where I play it every so often.
Right. I was about to say, it's not on Vita yet, but I think it definitely should come to Vita.
It
should.
Like Child of Light did. And if it comes to Vita, I'll buy it and play it.
Yeah.
It's well worth the time investment. And it's not even that long. It is longer than, so this is what happened with me. So like I planned this thing out and I'm like, okay, well, you know, like I need to, you know, I read a review where it said it was 6 hours long. And so I played like 3.5 hours and left the rest for one day.
Yeah.
And that one day I had left was not enough.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man. And I ended up, you know, like playing, I guess, like 6 hours straight or something.
Right. Well, I don't know what the reviewer was thinking. Maybe he didn't read anything of the historical.
Yeah.
Plan.
How do you do that?
Speed run it.
Unless
you figure
out the puzzles real fast and like, and yeah. And
that's what I think is, I like a lot of the reviewers, I think were like expecting these really hard puzzler things like Pushmo or something, you know, like a puzzle platformer game, you know, but it's like, this was a narrative driven puzzle.
Yeah. And I guess that's what confuses me like about that. It's just like, this was never billed as a extremely hard puzzle game. It was always like within the trailers and in the marketing, always billed as a narrative based game and story based game, and that's what it excels at, and it's really good. What would you rate it?
Man, this is a hard call. Do you remember? Well, I was gonna ask but it doesn't matter what I rated Child of Light. I would rate this one about a 9. Like, I mean, and if they fixed the, you know, the three like technical difficulties, you know, those little like small little things, like it would be more. But else, like as it sits, it's probably like an 8.99. I think it's probably 8.9 just because of those. So
my immediate reaction is 9.5, and that's just because like I just love the fact that they used the historical stuff the way that they did.
Yeah.
Like, and the complexity of the story and, you know, the way that they used and made you really connect with these secondary characters and these places. And it was just such a complex game. And they deserve props for that, man.
They sure do, man. And like I said, it's like if it had, there was, like I said, there's a couple of technical things, but it's like that took me out of the moment. If those didn't exist, it would be right there with you at the 9.5, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Jude, great game. Play it. Everybody needs to go out and play this game.
Yep, for sure. That's it for this week. I'm not sure what we've got coming up on the podcast next week, but we will be here.
We will be here.
Yes.
So you should be too.
Exactly. You can find us always online at standtargetpodcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Wright 250.
And me at JohnWright777. And that's JohnWright.
We did this wrong, and so that confused me.
7-7. Yeah, we went out of order. It was very strange, and I don't know why I just went all like spelling bee on us. So
yeah. So that's it for this week. We'll see you next time on
Stay on Target.